The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning to you. 4 minutes past nine, Tuesday the 14th of March. How are you keeping? I do hope you're very well indeed. And it's great to have you along for another edition of the 9 till noon show and listening to Donal referencing the weather there. And who would be a weather forecaster for Donegal? Sitting looking out the window here at the mountain top. Seems like a beautiful morning. Driving up this morning, barring a small gap, snow everywhere. Over Drumkeen, it is the same. It just goes to show these microclimates or whatever you might say. Call it. But anyway, be prepared if you're out and about. You might hit some bad weather if you're driving this morning. Keep us informed as well, too, by the way. The lines are open for all of your calls. 086 60 25,000. 086 60 25,000. That's for your WhatsApps and texts. Now, if you want to call, Caroline and Anya are taking your calls this morning. That's 07491 25,000. We welcome your emails to comments at highlandradio.com. And why not join us by watching the show on YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland, across our Facebook pages and on our website, and engage with us there. Okay, let's start with a look at this morning's newspapers, and not talking about the locals here, but the nationals. It was thin pickings this morning. I'm not going to lie to you, so this might be a brief little interlude for you. But some good news, I think, out of the Donegal Democrat this morning. Aldi Ireland has announced that it paid $4.5 million in wages and salaries last year while welcoming a million customer visits to its Donegal stores. That's really significant. One employer, $4.5 million in wages and salaries and 2 million customers through the doors of its Donegal stores. Obviously not separate people, people making return journeys. In 2022, Aldi sourced 12 million of locally produced food and drink from Donegal-based suppliers. Aldi partners with seven Donegal producers, including long-term relationships with Donegal Rapeseed Company and P. Mulryan and Sons. Okay, so I thought I'd kick off with a bit of good news there. On to the Derry Journal now, and it has been proposed that a development plan to be put in place for council lands at Barrack Hill and Carndonagh in a move that could be vitally important for the town. In a Sean-based Donegal County Councillor, Martin McDermott has proposed that Donegal County Council designate areas of the substantial area of land, around 30 acres, for housing, business and recreation, etc., so that development can take place. He said it's all council-owned land, but there's been no plan done for its development. On to the Nationals now, and one of the worst-kept secrets of late has been Joe Biden visiting Ireland. And the White House is to announce a five-day visit to Ireland next month by US President Joe Biden. He'll spend time in Belfast and Dublin, but the majority of his time will be spent in Mayo, where his ancestral roots lie. Confirmation will come on St. Patrick's Day when Taoiseach Leo Varadkar visits Washington for the traditional Oval Office meeting, and nothing will come in the way of that meeting. Micheál Martin, his predecessor, of course, barriers were put up in front of him every time he wanted to do that whole St. Patrick's Day routine between COVID and one thing and another, and him having COVID. Well, Mr. Biden will fly into Belfast around April 10th to mark the 25th anniversary of the Good Friday Agreement before then travelling to Dublin. It's thought he'll make at least one major public address in the manner of predecessors Bill Clinton and Barack Obama. But there will be up to 3 days spent in Mayo, according to US sources who've said an announcement is imminent. So he's not coming to coincide with the anniversary of the Good Friday Agreement. He will travel a little thereafter. Are you delighted? Are you welcoming it? Would you travel to go and see him and stand waving a flag? Let us know. 08660 25,000. Is it as big a deal as it might have been in the past, I wonder? It's a question, not a statement. The Irish Times this morning, the government is giving renewed consideration to the introduction of pre-budget tax breaks for the rental sector just a week after deciding against them. Now, these breaks should have been, and we mentioned this in our Friday panel, if you were going to make such a big decision as ending the eviction ban, logically, if you want to try and sort of manage the narrative as it's often referred to now, you'd have made these announcements at the same time to take the edge off it, would you not? But anyway, the forthcoming announcement, if it's made, comes amid ongoing criticism over its decision to end the eviction ban, with some in government now of the view that tax breaks for landlords and tenants should be brought in early to reverse the political momentum and keep renters in their homes, while cautioning that the most likely outcome was still to wait for the budget. Senior sources acknowledged earlier interventions were now being given fresh consideration. Minister for Finance Michael McGrath and Minister for Public Expenditure Pascal Donoghue held the line at a key cabinet meeting last week when faced with arguments from some colleagues that more could have been done on the tax side and are likely to resist any moves to revisit the decision. Doubling down, but it might be a direction of traffic they find difficult to resist. More than 1,200 people under the age of 65 are living in nursing homes and can't leave, with advocacy groups saying they're being held in custody due to the housing crisis. This is the Irish Daily Mail. Many young people were placed in nursing homes following sudden ill health and believed their placement would be temporary. Sage Advocacy Chief Mervyn Taylor said not enough effort is being made to resolve the situation. It seems, he says, to be the default form of thinking that a nursing home is the best place for people because other options are not being explored. What about people who don't want to be in a nursing home, he asks. Anyone listening affected by this story that could give us an insight into it? Are you or a loved one? Do you feel you're trapped or held in custody, as it's described in the paper, in a nursing home? Effectively, these people, he goes on to say, by the way, are detained. For some, it's care, but for others, it's custody. These figures come almost 2 years after damning findings by the Ombudsman. And I recall us covering that story at that time, too. Right, let's see. President Michael D. Higgins has stirred something amongst the public out there because children and parents pleaded with Education Minister Norma Foley to step in and introduce a homework ban after it was suggested by the President, Michael D. Higgins. In letters to the minister, children wrote about how they were being forced to give up hobbies because they were giving so much work to do after school. In one note, a pupil wrote about how 7 hours of school each day was plenty of education and that more work on top of that was unnecessary. So this is a young person, by the way. And as I say, I've said before on this show, we should probably listen to young people more, at least consult with them. This person wrote to the education minister saying, this is from a pupil, 7 hours of school each day was plenty of education and that more work on top was unnecessary. The child said, I do not ask for homework to be completely banned, but for it to be reduced to a certain limit. Otherwise, if there is a constant build-up of homework daily, it can cause stress and even a lack of exercise, which will affect a person's well-being. Okay, so as I say, hopefully they're at least considered, if not listened to. Good, potentially good news in advance for those who suffer or have Tourette's syndrome. A smartwatch-like device tested by the singer Lewis Capaldi has been found to reduce tics in people with Tourette syndrome. And we were down at his concert recently, and because he was tired, because it was a long show, his tics worsened as the show went on. I say worsened, I didn't find it in any way. It's just part of who he is. But he's at great pains to point out to his fans, who can be concerned at times, particularly younger ones that might not understand Tourette's syndrome, that it doesn't bother him as such, that it's just part of him. But that being said, he did enter into this trial. It's like a wristwatch people put on. He's only 26. He took part in a scientific trial after revealing in September that he has the disorder. The device stimulates the median nerve, which controls motor functions in the forearm, wrist and hand. Participants used the Neo Pulse, which is worn on the wrist, for 15 minutes at a similar time each day for a month and gave feedback. The trial of 121 people found that on average they experienced a 25% reduction in the frequency of tics. Lewis, whose mega hits include Someone Who You Loved and Forget Me, was said to have been impressed by the trial run by the University of Nottingham. So anytime there seems to be a significant medical advance, it seems, for me anyway, sorry, it doesn't seem, it is good news. Now, what do you think of the Irish perception of us internationally? Is it offensive? Do you find it offensive that we are still portrayed as fighting drunks? Like, is it something that we should harden up and just accept that these are just jokes and what have you? Or is it something we should say, you know, enough is enough. It's 2023. There's much more to us than being drunk and fighting. Well, in the Irish Daily Star today, the Banshee of Inisherin left empty-handed, but the Irish was still the talk of the Oscars after picking up two gongs and becoming the butt of host Jimmy Kimmel's one-liners. Colin Farrell even called out Kinnelin's US show Saturday Night Live skit about him and his co-star Brendan Gleeson in an awkward encounter with the host. The actor was full of smiles as he arrived, but anyway... in his monologue, this is Kimmel's monologue, including lines like, five Irish actors are nominated tonight, which means the chances of a fight just went way up, and it was some year for diversity and inclusion. We have nominees from every corner of Dublin. Sorry, let me reread that again. One of his lines was, it was some year for diversity and inclusion, we have nominees from every corner of Dublin. I'm not sure that one's quite offensive. This is the skit on Saturday Night Live, by the way, that was broadcast. It's probably the most popular comedy show, is it, in America. This is the comedians' take on the Irish.
But hold that thought, because I'm told we have the stars of the Banshees of Inisherin, Colin Farrell and Brendan Gleeson. Chances tonight?
You know, that's a word saying, you know, like, take words or troops for where in your bay.
Hey, me green pewatari, swill toony trees in it.
Yeah. Bush, like they say, you know, our times to go work, are giving like it's been for long on. So take ye team, me whole team at CAA.
Wow, and they haven't even started drinking yet.
All right, so that's the Saturday Night Live take on the Irish and our reputation. Now, do you think that's funny? Or do you think it's time maybe they tried to come up with something else? Now, that being said, do we perpetrate this ourselves? Because you know what's going to happen, don't you? We are welcoming the President of the United States, Joe Biden, to Ireland, of course. And what's the first thing that's going to happen? Where is he going to be brought first, probably? Well, not the first thing, but you get me. It's going to be to the Guinness storehouse, because that's what we do. Or we bring them into a pub and get them to pull a pint. So maybe we are our own worst enemies in it. Maybe it's not a bad thing. But what do you think? Does it annoy you when we are portrayed as we are? Now, the tourism industry, both in the south and in the north, are expressing concern after Britain announced the rollout of a new electronic travel authorisation, ETA. It's a scheme for foreign visitors. People who live in Ireland legally will be exempt from the requirement, we're told, but there is concern about the impact the measure will have on cross-border tourism. So you can imagine a situation where we have a German tourist, I presume this could be the case, or an American tourist who's in Lifford, sorry to use the obvious examples, and they decide they want to nip into Strabane. Now, there's not going to be anyone checking on the border that they have this ETA, but let's just say there was a bumper-to-bumper, something happened like that there. Police arrive, and they could be found to be in Britain, in Northern Ireland, the UK, as it's described, illegally. I don't know what the situation might be if someone wishes to travel from a bus to Dublin, to Letterkenny, and travel through the north. They're already boarding buses to check in terms of illegal movement. Will they be checking this? Now, anyway, we'll tease it out with our next guest. It's just this could create a perception that makes it complicated or worrisome to travel into Northern Ireland because people already have maybe preconceived notions that it's dangerous or something. And now you have this notion too that you'd land in Dublin and you'd need a special pass to get into the six counties. I think it's going to be disruptive. But it doesn't matter what I think. It matters what Dr. Joan Stewart, CEO of the Northern Ireland Tourism Alliance, thinks. Because as I say, Joanne, well, we'll get to what's proposed in your view and then we'll tease out the potential implications. Thanks so much for joining us, Joanne. How concerned is your alliance?
Morning, Greg. Yes, we are extremely concerned. Overseas tourism is really important for us and it represents 25% of our total tourism revenue. Now, why this is a particular issue is, as you know, as part of the Good Friday Agreement, tourism and overseas tourism for Northern Ireland was changed to be marketed as part of the Island of Ireland destination. So we are different from the rest of the UK. And basically, as a result of that, over 70% of our overseas tourists come via the Republic of Ireland and travel across the land border into Northern Ireland. And they're coming for a trip to the island of Ireland. So they visit north and south and are expecting seamless travel across the island, because that's how we've been developed. So as you set out in the introduction, what we're now saying is that if you want to come into Northern Ireland over the land border, you are moving into the UK and will need this electronic travel authorisation, or ETA. And if you don't have that, you are illegally in Northern Ireland. And if you're stopped for whatever reason, then you could be fined. You could end up in prison. You know, that's the extremity.
And Joanne, I saw a lot of people commenting on this and saying, but sure, no one cares. It's not going to be enforced. But if you're doing your research and you're travelling from a foreign country, right, and this is flagged, it is a thing. You know, people don't want to willingly or knowingly break the law. If I was lucky enough to go to Portugal in a particular area, I read in advance that I needed a cert to get into, I'm not just going to go, sure, what odds? Because I would be fearful that I could be pulled, you know, someone could pull me up on it. I think that's the majority. Now, there's some people on social media that are far braver than I, but I just have a feeling that this will worry some people. Will they get it in advance? It's going to have some sort of an effect, because we don't really know how it might be implemented, or where people would be told they might require this, for example, or how we would message it. Or
yes, and that's part of the real challenge. So that, you know, they keep, the Home Office would say this is very much similar to an ESTA if you're going to the States. Now, the difference is that when you're going to the States, when you book your ticket, you are told by the airline you need an ESTA. You can't actually book your ticket until you have an ESTA number. So it's made very clear to you that you need that. And it will be checked when you arrive in the States. So for the 70% of tourists who come via the Republic of Ireland, they're not going to be told they need an ETA to go into the UK, because they're going to Ireland, and maybe as part of their trip they are going to go to Northern Ireland. But if they're not even aware that it's a different jurisdiction, I mean, we're promoted as the island of Ireland, so there's an expectation they will be able to travel around. So I think the fear is that, how do you get that message so they really understand? And also, people, when they come to Ireland, make spontaneous trips to Northern Ireland. They may decide, I'm here, I'll go up for 2 days. Now, what we're being told in the rules that we, because we don't know everything, but what we know at the moment is it can take up to 3 working days to process an application. So if on a Thursday you decide, I'm going to go up for a weekend, you know, it, you're not going to bother. If you think it's going to take you 3 days, plus every single person in your group, so if you're a family of five, you have to do 5 applications, you have to pay 5 fees, and you have to wait for 5 approvals to actually come in.
And I've bumped into tourists in a pub in Donegal in the summer, and you chat to them, what are you doing tomorrow? I don't know, well, we think we might head up to Belfast. They think they might, do you know? Yes. Now, obviously, the way news is it says, the plans, 70% of visitors arrive via Dublin. This puts 25% of all tourists spend an estimated €250 million in Northern Ireland at risk. Of course, that's the headline worst. It's not going to be that. But if it's 5 million or 7 million or 18 million or 25 million, you know, even if an awful lot of what you would see as being necessary were introduced, it is still going to put some people off. Maybe the nervous traveller. Yeah. Well, what's wrong with the 6 counties? Why would I? Do you know? So really, we've got a bit of time here. It's getting shot of this altogether is what we really need to do, isn't it?
Yes. And we've been working on this for the last 10 months because it was part of a much bigger bill, the Nationalities and Borders Bill. I'm very intensely engaging over the last sort of 6 months with the Home Office to make the case for this. We're very disappointed that we didn't get it. Obviously, we welcome the fact that legal residents who aren't British and Irish in the Republic of Ireland obviously are going to be able to travel across the UK, and that's great because that impacts on our tourism as well.
What is the definition of that, Joanne? Do you know now? I know that's probably, it's outside the tourism industry, but what is the definition of a legal resident?
So you have got permission to live legally
Ireland. That. Okay, understood.
Yes, and what they'll be looking at is, now, again, because I mean, I think the confusion is that the Home Office have been very categorical that there are not going to be any immigration checks on the land border. So it is very much, you know, if somebody is stopped for some reason, there's real concern about racial profiling. So if it's intelligence-led immigration checks, what does that mean? And also, if you, as you say, if you have an accident, your insurance is invalidated, never mind the whole legal implications.
But the spontaneity of it too, I mean, we don't have a, what is the tourism income from spontaneity, from spontaneous visitors
I mean, that's, I mean, the number of day trips, you know, that we would have is something actually we don't measure. However, sort of based on sort of best estimations, you know, it's up to about £500 million worth to us in revenue terms. So if you're removing that, you know, it's just, you know, and obviously tourism supports so many other sectors. So, you know, we see your restaurants and your pubs, but your retail, transport, you know, and it's regional. So it provides jobs across all different communities across the island of Ireland. I think there's real concern about reputational damage. And I know the Irish government are concerned about the impact on the island of Ireland tourism. Mm. You know, Belfast has some really great product that attracts people. And if suddenly you're putting a barrier into the ease of being able to access that, maybe think people will think differently about Ireland and go somewhere else.
So, yeah, I mean, Joe Biden's coming later this year. You know, if this were in place by then, we could have a situation whereby he's having to get he might get a pass, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah,
he would
no,
have to get an electronic travel authorization, and him and all his staff to pass from Belfast to Dublin to Mayo and back to Belfast. You get on, if tourists were saying, should we get on that ferry at Greencastle and head over to Derry? Would you have your ETA? Now, we know no one's enforcing it, don't get me wrong, but it's still there. It's in
legal.
The back of your head. So yeah, you say foreign registered vehicle. If you appear to look different, it could affect cross-border workers. Okay, thanks, Joanne. Stay with us because Deputy Padraig McLaughlin's with us as well, of course. He raised this issue last year with the Department of Foreign Affairs. So we've known about it for some time, but I just don't think I didn't expect it to emerge like it has. Deputy McLaughlin.
Well, first of all, Greg, there might be a bit of noise in the background. There's just work taking place in the house, so apologies to your listeners if there's any noise in the background. The Joanna's laid out the situation really, really well there. You know, one of the things whenever Brexit was unfolding was we all worked together, cross-party, cross-political on the island, to protect the island economy. And as Joanne says, you know, many people who visit the north of Ireland travel through Dublin Airport. That's the route they use. You want seamless travel on the island. So I would have raised this late last year, and the concerns were being raised with me at that stage were cross-border workers. And as Joanne says, they seem to have listened to that issue of people who are resident in the Republic of Ireland, in the likes of Donegal, and who are working cross-border. But the issue of tourists is still not resolved. The Irish government, in the response it gave me, are seriously concerned about this, are engaging with the British government on a cross-party basis. Politicians in the north of Ireland have raised this. So on the island of Ireland, of all political parties, civic society has raised serious concerns to the British government. I'm also mindful, Greg, that, you know, obviously you have the Windsor framework now. You have this new negotiation between the British government and the European Commission. I would imagine that, you know, in the spirit of that framework and that agreement, they really need to listen to our concerns and make sure that anybody who's visiting, you know, through Dublin Airport can seamlessly travel into the north of Ireland.
So
we really can't have
if
that.
Someone from Germany currently, would they need an ETA to go to London?
Yes.
At the moment, do they? Yeah.
Oh, no, at the moment. Sorry. No, at the moment, they just need a passport and that gets them anywhere in the UK.
Yeah, but like I'm on a... So post this being introduced, Joanne, if a visitor from France wants to jump on the Channel Tunnel to go into London, would they require this document?
Yes.
Okay, so this is Britain and Northern Ireland wide.
This is a UK.
Understood,
the UK,
right? Okay.
taking back control of their borders, as they say. Now, the difference is, Greg, is that in that case, they are going into what you call a direct port of entry.
Yes.
So they are arriving directly into the UK. They're going through immigration control. They will have been told before they travel that they needed an ETA, and in fact, may not have been able to travel if they didn't have one.
Yep.
This is different. And what we're saying is that people arrive in the Republic of Ireland and are driving or getting a train or getting a coach, none of whom have any obligation to check or to make sure that they have an ETA. And we're not arguing against people coming direct into Belfast. If somebody's flying direct from France to Belfast, we are not arguing that point because they will have been told they need an ETA.
Yeah.
They're arriving in an airport where there's immigration checks. So we understand that policy side, and we get that, but this is an invisible virtual border that people don't even know they're crossing, and it's that legal jeopardy, because people may not know about it, you talk to some of the coach operators, you know, people don't realize they're in a different country, or they're in a different jurisdiction.
And also too, you see, we talk about sort of casual day trippers and all that kind of stuff, all right, but let's just say a group of tourists are in Sligo and they contact or Donegal Town or whatever, and they contact a local bus company and say, look, we want to go into Derry, can you drive us in? I mean, I presume the bus operator wouldn't want to be complicit in illegally moving these people. Do you know what I mean? So in terms of organised trips, I presume that bus driver or operator will say, well, do you have your ETAs? And they go, well what's our... Go ahead, Joanne.
Yes. And that's part of the problem, because the Home Office would say there's no legal obligation on the tour operator to do that.
Right.
They don't need to check or anything. But because we are professionals and we don't want to put anybody
I'd be reluctant if I was...
Yep. We would be saying, you know, have you got an ETA? And if half of that group say, actually, no, I don't, and it could take 3 working days to get that ETA, well, the spontaneity of that,
right,
of that trip and the ability for them to do it has gone.
But, Padraig, how do we then go about resolving this? Because I presume there are people in Northern Ireland who don't think this is a good idea, but at the same time would like Northern Ireland to be treated the same as the rest of the UK. You know what I mean? So they might have some sort of soft resistance to this being dropped. I mean, do you believe this can be resolved, Padraig? And if so, how can it be and ensure that Northern Ireland is treated the same as Scotland, Wales and England?
Yeah, no, I do think it can be resolved with the same will and resolve that was shown with the Windsor framework, and right now the spirit is that you have a British government who's working with the European Commission to try and resolve issues. There is no political support for this approach that I'm aware of on the island of Ireland, and it's a particular issue, obviously, Greg, in Donegal, because we market Donegal, Derry, Tyrone together as one region to visit. So it's a particular issue for us to be concerned about. And I mean, if there's a will to resolve it, so my responsibility now is to re-engage with the Irish government, who in turn will engage with the British government. And again, I think with the desire to get the Stormont institutions up and running again, the desire to, I suppose, encourage unionism to come back into Stormont, you would imagine in that environment, we should be able to resolve this issue. And I think that with people like Joanne standing up and point out the practical, serious practical problems, you know, I'm hopeful that we can resolve it in this current political environment.
Joanne, please. Yes.
So I'm going to say, we have obviously been engaging an awful lot with the Irish government, and they have been very supportive of our case, and even, you know, and are continuing to do so, even though we've resolved the issue of the legal residence. We have complete cross-party support from the Northern Ireland political parties, which we don't always have.
Mm.
So this is one point where the DUP and the unionist parties support this and really understand the importance, because this is about our economy. This is about the reputation of Northern Ireland as a place.
Yes.
And so we do have all of that support. I just think we still have to really make the UK government understand the the day-to-day impact on this and how actually it's only 1% of the total visitors that come to the UK. So we're not undermining any policy issue for them. And the fact that they're not going to check, then you have to ask, well, then why do you need to get one and cause all this problem when you're not going to check?
Timelines, Joanne, just this is not something for this summer. Okay. Yep. So just for people listening, I think with the types of conversations like these happening, broadly speaking, I think this is something that can be averted. But we're talking elements of this year, some towards the end of the next year. Is that the...
Yes. So they are, the first pilot is with Qatar, and that is starting the end of this year. Then they're rolling it out to the rest of the Gulf states. And we're expecting the USA, Europe, you know, those bigger markets towards the end of 2024. We are really making a plea that it is the end of next year and not May before your high season. But obviously there is still an opportunity to get this change. We are working with all of the political parties in the UK and the Irish government to see if we can get this amended. So yeah, the game is not finished yet.
No, exactly.
And we are continuing to make the case, and I really appreciate the support of Padraig and the Irish government.
Yeah, well done, Dr. Joanne Stewart, CEO of the Northern Ireland Tourism Alliance, in doing your bit to speak about this in advance, be proactive. We really appreciate it. Thanks very much indeed. You mentioned Padraig, the possibility of getting a government back in situ in the north. It's not going to happen before Joe Biden's visit next month, I take it. There's no chance of that.
Doesn't look like it, Greg. Obviously unionism, political unionism, has a lot of soul searching to do. But one thing that Rishi Sunak, the British Prime Minister, was right about, this is a unique opportunity now for the north of Ireland. Having voted against Brexit, voted to stay in the European Union, and being forced into that scenario, there's a unique opportunity now with access to the British economy and the European single market. So that was true in what he said. And it's good for Donegal, it's good for Derry, it's good for Tyrone, if we can stabilise. But the most important thing, Greg, is, and I've said this to you before, it is just a disaster not to have a proper government up and running in Stormont.
Do you believe that if as many of the DUP's demands are met as is possible, do you believe they can find it within themselves to play second fiddle to Sinn Féin, or will there always be something? Do you believe that if they can be satisfied as to their concerns, that it is, that's what it's about? In other words, they can go into government with a deputy first minister.
Yeah, I mean, as you know, Greg, the reality of First and Deputy First Minister is it's actually joint First Minister.
You know yourself, though. It's the perception.
I agree, Greg. There's definitely a view, a widespread view in nationalism, that political unionism, do not want to serve under a Sinn Féin First Minister, even though it is a joint First Minister. And that's going to be tested now. I mean, the British government and the European Commission have had a real go here at trying to make the protocol, now the Windsor Framework, this whole issue of trade in the Irish Sea as manageable as possible. There's no excuses left now, none left. It's time to get back to work. And, as I say again, it's like Derry, I'm from Buncrana, it's 30 minutes from Derry City. I'm in Derry, I'm engaging with people in Tyrone all the time. And I just feel so sorry for them that they do not have a government to engage with, to hold to account. It's totally unacceptable and unsustainable, and it needs to be resolved.
All right, thanks for your time. We appreciate it. And they must be using cloth hammers in the house because we couldn't hear a thing. All right.
They're tearing up floorboards.
All right,
what
okay.
have you.
All right, take
Greg,
care. No bother, we couldn't hear it. All right, take care. Deputy Padraig McLoughlin there of the Sinn Féin Party, of course. And we also heard from Dr. Joanne Stewart, CEO of the Northern Ireland Tourism Alliance. Alliance, I was going to say, but it is Alliance, of course. 086 60 25,000, WhatsApps and texts on that issue, or anything else you want to talk about this morning. Very pleased to welcome onto the show now Larry Donnelly, University of Galway Law Lecturer and political columnist with The Journal. Good morning to you, Larry. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Greg. Great to be with you.
It's great to have you with us. Right, OK. It's been all but confirmed that President Joe Biden will visit Northern Ireland to mark the upcoming anniversary of the Good Friday Agreement, which the US, of course, helped to broker 25 years ago. And he'll also visit the Republic, and he'll spend much of his time, too, in his ancestral, where his ancestors are from, that is in the Mayo area. How significant is this, Larry? Is it significant? It doesn't feel as significant as, you know, a Biden visit or a Bill Clinton visit. I don't know. Are we just becoming immune to this stuff, or maybe I'm just missing the buzz?
Well, maybe it's a good thing that we're becoming immune to it, because it's so commonplace for American presidents to visit Ireland. And I think that's a wonderful, wonderful thing, and a reaffirmation of an extraordinary transatlantic partnership. I think in the case of Joe Biden, again, who is, you know, given his roots not just in Ballinagh, but also in Louth, is by some measurements the most Irish president that we've had. And I think his commitment to Ireland, I think his commitment to the Good Friday Agreement, his commitment to a smooth, I suppose, passageway out of Brexit as best we can, I think are to be welcomed. And the fact that he's so interested in coming here, I think is something that is a really wonderful event. Now, what day he's going to be here, the details of the trip, it depends on which newspaper you read this morning. But all in all, it's great news.
The stronger the relationship is between the US and Ireland, the better for the Irish. There's no doubt about that, is there?
No, absolutely not. And I should also say it's a two-way street, Greg. There's an awful lot of Irish businesses who are employing thousands of people in the United States. So this is very much a two-way relationship. And also, there are longer-term issues here. I think, you know, having a president who professes to be as Irish as Joe Biden does is a good thing in an era when some of the ties, at least the ties that were cemented by emigration from Ireland to the United States, are beginning to wane. So those of us who are committed to the relationship need to look at every angle we can to maintain what is the envy of the rest of the world, to be frank. And having a president visit here is great, as is the fact that this week so many Irish politicians will be strolling the corridors of power, not just in Washington, D.C., but throughout the United States.
Already, I imagine the Secret Service have been in Ireland doing their due diligence. It's a massive operation anytime a U.S. president visits overseas.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's and one of the things, and this is why some of the media reports are conflicting and details are emerging. And a lot of it, to be honest, is conjecture. The Secret Service isn't very fond of letting the world know exactly what the president of the United States.
The clue is in their name.
Yeah, they don't like letting word of his travel plans go too broadly. So I think a lot of what you see is conjecture. I'm almost at the stage where I believe it when I see it in terms of what his agenda is going to be. So, yes, it's a massive operation. But I think what we can, I think, pretty much guarantee is that he'll be in Dublin, he'll be in Belfast, he'll be in Mayo, and he'll be in Louth. And I think he's going to give at least one public address, probably in Dublin, in the mode of what Barack Obama did. And also, I think he's going to say something. Now, what he's going to say in Belfast, I'm not so sure. But this is going to be the tricky part. There are diplomatic issues here. There are some in the unionist community who believe that Joe Biden is too close, too much of an Irish Republican, an Irish nationalist. He needs to walk a very careful tightrope because, again, one of the things that I'm concerned about is that it's in the interest of everybody on these two islands, and in particular, the people of Northern Ireland, that Stormont get back up and running.
Yeah, and it will be very carefully chosen, his words and his speech will be. He's got a team of writers. Obviously, it'll have his fingerprints on it, but also they will be checking in advance as to what would be well received and what might not be well received, and where they feel they can push it a little bit and areas in which they can't. Like, this is heavily staged, managed, even down to the words that will come out of his mouth in a couple next month.
It certainly is. And look, I say this as somebody who has a lot of respect for the president, who's a fan of the president, who thinks he's done very well, despite what his detractors say. The fact is that Joe Biden does have an unfortunate penchant for sometimes saying things that he shouldn't say off the cuff and those sorts of things. So he needs to be careful that something like that isn't said. I'm confident it won't happen. But again, that's the kind of thing we don't want to see. We don't want any of anything about this visit to detract or distract or delay the important process of getting business going again in Stormont. So again, I don't think it'll happen. But look, you know, I think we'd be blind to reality if we didn't recognize that Biden hasn't in the past said things, you know, for instance, about the BBC, also said things like, you know, I may be Irish, but I'm not stupid. So, you know, he just needs to be careful about that stuff.
And I think Rishi Sunak is the type of UK prime minister that will want to make some capital out of this as well, particularly post-Brexit and as they try and forge relationships around the world. And of course, too, in the context of what's happening in Eastern Europe.
Absolutely, that's true. And Rishi Sunak is also cognizant of something else, and that is that Joe Biden and his extraordinary commitment to Ireland, as well as the United States Congress, you know, again, showing that Irish America's political clout is still alive and well, is effectively that unless things go well, to put it in simple terms, flowing from Brexit, that the UK is not going to get a good trade deal from the United States. Rishi Sunak recognizes the importance of that and will be very keen to ensure smooth sailing, despite, again, the reservations and concerns and the difficulties that some in the unionist community might present.
Quick question, if you don't mind, just curious for your insight into what's happening on Fox News and Tucker Carlson in particular, sort of rewriting the history as it relates to the Capitol protests, stroke riots, and in documents being released suggesting certain attitudes amongst Fox News presenters were at odds with the maybe what they were presenting. What's happening in your view in America in the media at the moment in that regard, Larry?
It's a really good question. I do have a couple of hours. You know, what's happened is that a lot of behind the scenes, the Fox News presenters understand what their audience wants. And when you have the commodification of news and the tailoring of news, which should be objectively delivered to a certain audience, this is unfortunately the logical consequence of it. The Fox News presenters, despite what they knew to be objective reality, they also knew that a lot of their viewers didn't want to accept the fact that Donald Trump had lost the election, didn't want to accept the fact that January 6th was as bad as it truly was, and wanted to deliver what the people wanted, because at the end of the day, it boils down to ratings, boils down to advertising revenue. So this is the end game of a very sad chapter, I suppose, in American history. And, you know, Fox News is the obvious example of that on the American political right. But if you look at MSNBC on the American political left, you could watch the coverage on those two stations of the exact same event and think you were watching something totally different.
Like, it's got to the point whereby some of these news shows now would really need to be flagged as, you know, for entertainment purposes. You know, the big long clarifications American ads have if they're advertising tablets or something medical. Do you know, it would never happen. But I mean, the media over there is in the space from the outside looking in, whereby it is for entertainment, because what is real now is being portrayed or spun to suit a particular political stance of networks. And that is not news, Larry, and it's doing news a great disservice, I think.
It certainly is, absolutely, Greg. And one of the most chilling things to emerge from Tucker Carlson and what we're hearing, and also this ongoing lawsuit against Fox, is not just that these presenters are committed ideologues. I, in one way, I could say, okay, he's a committed right-wing person, this is what he believes, et cetera, is the fact that they don't even, in many cases, they don't even believe what they're saying. They are only saying it because they know that that's what the audience wants to hear. And when a reportedly news outlet goes down that avenue, it's very, very dangerous for the polity.
And very hard to come back from. It really is. Because when you have two polarized sections of society and networks that play to either side of those, at what point do you return to sort of pre-days of that? I wouldn't like to unravel that. And unfortunately, we're seeing quite a bit of that outside in this country, for example, as well. Larry, always a pleasure to get your insights. Really do appreciate your time. Thank you so very much indeed. Larry Donnelly of the University of Galway, his law lecturer there, also a political columnist with the Journal. All right, I want to give you another reminder of our competition. Thanks to our friends at St. Mary's GEA Convoy. They have a fantastic competition for €50,000 going to be won on St. Patrick's Day. You can go on to their socials, St. Mary's GEA Convoy Development Draw, find out more information about it. But here's how you can win two free tickets today. Where are we?
On this week's show, with thanks to our sponsor, St. Mary's GEA Convoy Development Draw, we're giving you the chance to win two tickets to their 50K for €50 draw. To be in with a chance of winning these tickets, all you have to do is answer the following question. In the famous All-Ireland song from 2012, Jimmy's winning what? Is it A, matches, or B, footballs? Text or WhatsApp your answer, name and address to 086 60 25000.
Irish Music Month Finalist 1.
Okay, we're going to be announcing the winner of this competition tomorrow. We've got Oshi Nee taking part, of course, and...
Irish Music Month Finalist 2.
Charles James on the Rise, another cracking song. One of these is going to be going on to represent the Northwest in a big competition later this year. Midnight Preachers. Right, 3 out of 3, not bad so far. What do you think? And
Finalist 4.
Boy M5, we had them all live. You've been voting over the weekend. Your votes are in. And they have been counted. Our judges, our external panel of judges, are currently at the moment going through all of the live performances, and they are going to be coming up with their winner, and we are going to announce the winner on this programme tomorrow. So we're all very excited about that. Stay tuned for that. I just wanted to give you a reminder. The voting lines have closed, by the way. But they're all very familiar songs. It's amazing what airplay will do, isn't it? A caller says, what about the likes of my son who lives in America but comes home to Donegal twice a year? Will he need this now to travel to Strabane and Derry? Not quite sure. We don't know, you see. The details are still being finalised, but is he a legal resident in Ireland? I suspect he is, although he doesn't live here all the time. But that being said, anyone from Europe could be legally resident in Ireland, couldn't they? So I presume he will need this travel pass. You need an ESTA number to enter the USA, but Joanne said you need the number to book a flight, and that is not correct. I think what Joanne was saying is that I think it's pretty much generally accepted that if you fancy going into America, you have to have the ESTA document. And it's common knowledge. People go in with their eyes wide open, whereas it might not be made as clear coming here, because if you're flying into Dublin, why would they start flagging the fact that you need a pass to go into the north? A lot of Americans still believe that Ireland in its entirety is part of the UK. Lots of people believe lots of things, I get you. When will the penny ever drop that the partition of Ireland was a very bad idea? Hi, Greg, could you get your money doctor to talk about the invest option on Revolut for those of us that are clueless when it comes to investing? It seems to have stocked commodities, crypto in there. Everything is with risk. I'm not sure if we could talk specifically about one particular outlet, but look, maybe it is something that we could talk about. Okay, we have that hour in the bag. It's time to take a break for the news and obituary notices. Stay where you are. We have Community Garda information coming up for you after 10, where you hear first, before it appears elsewhere, the latest news, appeals and information from An Garda Síochána, exclusively here every Tuesday morning, just after 10.